United States Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit is pleased to meet this afternoon to pay our respects and pay homage to a former member of this court, Judge Joseph Woodruff, who had served for a long period of time on the court, and I think probably a unique point in our judicial system. I doubt if there's a service of this type will be repeated in the near future, and I doubt if it has been held in the past to pay our respects to a member who had served most of his adult life as a federal judge and had reached the age of 104 years. Time he passed away. We have with us one member of the family, Mr. Frederick Woodruff, is the nephew of Judge Woodruff. We're most pleased, Mr. Woodruff, to have you with us for this ceremonial occasion. Judge Woodruff's daughter, Mrs. Marjorie Burns of Chicago, Illinois, and four of the grandchildren of Judge Woodruff, William Burns, Thomas Burns, Robert Burns, and Nancy Wilson, were to be here. They planned to be here. I guess they're not here. Is that right, Mr. Bruckner?
That's correct, Your Honor. We have no idea.
I had just gotten word by phone that Burns has had an accident en route here, and one of them was at St. Louis Hospital, and they wouldn't be able to be here. I took it to be an automobile accident, although I'm not sure just the nature and type of the accident. I certainly hope it's nothing serious. In a ceremony of this type, we are indeed fortunate to have Mr. Richard L. Bruckner, an attorney of Omaha, Nebraska, as chairman of the Memorial Committee. Mr. Bruckner formerly served as a law clerk to Judge Woodruff and had many notable experiences with Judge Woodruff and traveled with him over in Europe and other parts of this country. Also, we're pleased to have here today Frank A. Masson, who one time was a secretary to Judge Woodruff. Mr. Massey, you stand, please. We're very pleased to have you here. Mr. Massey was later a court reporter for Judge Nordby and was for 12 years was clerk of the district court here in the District of Minnesota. At this time, it is my pleasure to turn the meeting of the court over to Mr. Bruckner, who is chairman of the Memorial Committee. Mr. Bruckner.
May it please the court, Chief Judge Gibson, judges of this court, and friends of Judge Woodruff. The committee appointed by this court to present a memorial session in the memory and in tribute to Judge Woodruff respectfully tenders this tribute to his person, his character, and his long and distinguished public service. To this court, we offer a resolution in memory of Judge Woodruff that a transcript of these proceedings be included in the official records of this court. Judge Woodruff's career spanned 104 years, from August the 29th of 1873 to October the 2nd of 1977. He served as a United States District Judge from 1916 to 1933, some 17 years, and as a United States Circuit Judge for 28 years, from 1933 to 1961, for a total of 45 years active federal service. Judge Woodruff was born on October 29, 1873, in Cincinnati, Ohio. He took his early education at the Chickering School in Ohio. At age 16, he traveled to Europe and attended the Annenschule in Dresden, Germany. It should be noted that Justice Louis Brandeis received his early education at the same school at about the same time. Judge Woodruff completed graduate work at Heidelberg University, after which he toured Europe, Britain, Russia, by bicycle and on foot, partly with Richard Scoville, a nephew of President Theodore Roosevelt. During his student days in Europe, he was one of a number of American and English students presented to William, the young King of Prussia. At age 20, Judge Woodruff returned to the United States and spent a year studying in the law office of his uncle in Omaha, Nebraska. However, in the early summer of 1893, he took up residence among the gunslingers of the Pecos Valley in Ward County, Texas. He was admitted to the bar of Texas in 1894. A brittle news clipping from that era describes what young Judge Woodruff was up against when he went into the cattle business, onion farming, and the practice of law in Texas. Quote, the population was a rough and ready mixture of white, black, red, and yellow. As unlearned in civil or criminal codes as it was proficient in the art of quick draw and steady trigger finger. With a first-class education in Europe behind him, the young country lawyer quickly won respect, and in 1894, he was elected Ward County Judge in Texas. Noting that the feudal wars and shootings were rapidly depleting the population, Judge Woodruff prohibited the carrying of firearms. Man after man was brought to court and fined $25 for owning weapons, the clipping said, and peace soon reigned in the Pecos Valley. Following his term as a state judge, he served as county attorney of Ward County, Texas until 1897. Judge Woodruff returned to Omaha, Nebraska in 1898 and practiced law with the firm of Woodruff, Gurley, and West. He married the former Ella Bonner in 1902 and spent the next 14 years practicing law in Omaha, Nebraska. His dedication and integrity won him the respect of all who knew him, and in April of 1916, President Woodrow Wilson appointed him as the youngest then federal judge in the nation at age 43. When he heard of his appointment as a federal judge, Judge Woodruff was quoted in the local Omaha Daily as saying, "It was the best April Fool's joke ever played on me, but I'm not too sure about the public." Judge Woodruff served as a United States District Judge for 17 years. In 1923, a ruling by Judge Woodruff that prohibition agents were not civil officers and thus could not legally serve search warrants had considerable ramifications. The ruling caused concern in the Justice Department, the Treasury Department, and the national headquarters of the Anti-Salute League, the news story related. In another prohibition case, Judge Woodruff held that the smell of fermenting mash was not sufficient grounds for the issuance of a search warrant. There must be evidence of an illegal sale or an illicit sale of alcohol, he added. He presided at the second trial of Robert Stroud, the famed birdman of Alcatraz. In 1933, Judge Woodruff was appointed to the United States Court of Appeals by Franklin Roosevelt, and he served for 28 years until his retirement in 1961 at the age of 88. During his years on the Court of Appeals, he wrote and participated in many precedent-setting decisions on matters of evidence, search and seizure, and unlawful arrest. He participated in the historic Little Rock School desegregation cases. He cherished his friendship with judges of this court, and particularly with Judge Sanborn of this city. It's a shame their correspondence could not have been preserved and published for students of the law. I vividly recall a case in which Judge Woodruff and Judge Sanborn were having difficulty reaching agreement. Judge Woodruff finally wrote a letter to Judge Sanborn suggesting certain changes and additions be made in an opinion that they were to concur on. Judge Sanborn, by return mail, wrote to Judge Woodruff, quote, "Dear Will, the practice in this circuit is to concur or dissent. Sincerely, John." Judge and Mrs. Woodruff moved to Midlothian, Illinois after his retirement in 1961 to be near his family. Mrs. Woodruff died in 1962 at the age of 88 during the year of their 60th wedding anniversary. Judge Woodruff is survived by his daughter, Marjorie Beckett Burns of Chicago, five grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and a nephew, Frederick Woodruff of Silver Springs, Maryland. The life of the walking judge ended on September, October the 2nd, 1977, when he died after a very brief illness. Judge Woodruff was a lawyer for 83 years, a judge for 45 of those years. And throughout his life, he applied his energy, his intelligence, and wit in service of the law. To know him was to love him. We are not here as mourners, for as Judge Woodruff would have said, he ran the full course. Rather, we are here to convey our gratitude for the joy, the stimulus, the strength we can draw from his life and have drawn from it, each in his different way in our association with him throughout the years. I owe him more than I've ever owed anyone in the world. From the time I was a law clerk in his office until he died, he was a dear and intimate friend of mine. My education would have been but a poor and thin thing had I missed that great experience with Judge Woodruff. For all of us who knew Judge Woodruff, we can only echo, and so the great man is gone.
At this time, I would like to read to the court and the person here a letter from Mr. Justice Blackmun. Mr. Justice Blackmun is a member of this court, served with Judge Woodruff. We had hoped, and he had hoped, that he would be able to be here for this occasion. He was not able to leave Washington, but he did want to send his regards and pay his respects in this ceremony. I will now read the letter from Mr. Justice Harry A. Black, addressed to me, dear Floyd. I regret that I am not able to be with the Eighth Circuit on May 17th when it has its memorial session at St. Paul for the Honorable Joseph W. Woodruff. The judge, as everyone is aware, was a longtime member of the court and was an ornament and a happy addition to it. He afforded sensitivity and humor and, I know, was pleased to be one of its judges. I first met the judge in 1932 when I was a law clerk for Judge John B. Sandman. He was the same then as he was when I joined the court in 1959. He liked people, he liked life. He was as much at home at Judge Sandman's place on the St. Croix River as he was in the big courtroom in the federal building in St. Louis. The judge enjoyed new ideas and at times could be just a little mischievous in advancing them to observe his colleagues struggle with the thought of re-examining what always had been assumed. He accepted life as it was and he thoroughly enjoyed it. He loved his walks to East St. Louis and to Forest Park. And woe unto the law clerk who was not able to keep up with him. He lived a long and fruitful life. The court is the better for his presence. Sincerely, Harry, signed Harry A. Black. Would also like to read a letter from Judge Mathis of this court, who had also served with Judge Woodruff on this court. Judge Mathis, because of physical disability, is not able to be here today. His letter reads as follows. I regret my inability to attend the memorial services to be held in honor of the Honorable Joseph W. Woodruff at 3 p.m. on May 17, 1978, in the Federal Courts Building in St. Paul, Minnesota. It was my distinct privilege to serve with Judge Woodruff from the day of my official inauguration on March 14, 1958, until the judge last served as a judge in our court in May 1961. In a session of the court held in the federal building in Omaha, Nebraska. That session was composed of a panel of the late Harvey M. Johnson, who was then Chief Judge, Judge Woodruff, and me. Interestingly enough, Judge Woodruff was the only judge of our court present at the simple ceremony when the judicial oath was administered to me by the Honorable George H. Moore, then the Chief Judge of the United States District Court for the Eastern District of Missouri. Present at the ceremony, in addition to Judge Woodruff, were Judge Roy W. Harper, my secretary, a close friend, and some members of the meeting. Judge Woodruff and I became warm friends and sat together in hearing cases on many occasions. I learned to respect his keen intellect, his searching and analytical legal mind, the abundance of common sense with which he had been endowed, and above all, his sense of humor. Although the official records show that Judge Woodruff retired from active service on January 3, 1961, he did perform official service in May 1961. After writing his share of the opinions heard at the Omaha session, he ceased performing official duties for any federal court. To know Judge Woodruff intimately was to admire, respect, and love him. He made a lasting contribution to our circuit, and his memory will be cherished and revered by all who knew him. Signed, M.C. Mathis. At this time, I will turn the ceremony back to Mr. President.
Chief Judge Gibbs, at this time, I have the honor to present the Honorable Richard E. Robinson, United States Senior District Judge for Nebraska.
Mr. Robinson.
May it please the court, Chief Judge Gibson, my colleagues at the bench and bar, and friends of me, Judge Woodruff. I count it a special privilege and honor to be given the opportunity today to say a few words in tribute to the late and beloved Judge Joseph Woodruff. I shall not deal with the details of Judge Woodruff's judicial life. These have been otherwise ably presented by Mr. Bruckner. It's enough to say that it was an extraordinarily rich and fruitful life. Instead, I propose to talk for just a few minutes about Joseph Woodruff, the man. Though many in this courtroom and on the bench would argue that Woodruff, the man, was Woodruff, the jurist, since the bar and bench were his whole life. The temptation is strong to say that Judge Woodruff was a common man, meaning by that he was simple, almost Spartan in his tastes and in the way he lived. In his extensive travels, he shunned luxury hotels. He spent little time in the clubs. His usual lunch in the cafeteria consisted of a bowl of soup and a piece of raisin pie. He disliked ostentation or pomposity in any form. And yet each of us knows that Joseph Woodruff was anything but a common man. A man of plain living and a man of common sense, of course, but definitely an uncommon man in his intellect, his sense of decency, his enthusiasm for the law and justice. As I think back over the years that we were colleagues, and particularly during the time that our chambers in the old post office building in Omaha, I'm struck by the fact that Judge Woodruff never seemed to look back. He always looked to the future. I remember when the federal government had decided to erect a new federal building or courthouse in Omaha, just across the street from the old building. There was a raging controversy over whether the old Richardsonian structure was to be preserved or whether it was to be raised in the name of progress. Judge Woodruff had no time for such sentimentality. He was consumed with the day-by-day progress on the new building, marveled at the new construction techniques, and could barely wait for the day we would move into our new chambers. He was fascinated with any scientific breakthroughs and was particularly taken by laser beams and the promise they held for technological progress. I've often thought that this attitude, this living of each day to day, its fullest extent, and with the greatest expectations for tomorrow, was a major factor in the long and rich life Judge Woodruff enjoyed. Of course, Judge Woodruff believed as well in physical fitness. His favorite exercise was walking, and incredible as it seems today, he often hiked the 10 or 11 miles from his home in Ralston, a suburb of Omaha, to his chambers. Indeed, in the early days, when he was on the district court, when he sat in Lincoln and other cities farther outstate, he is reported to have walked there from Omaha. And a whole platoon of former law clerks can testify that when the court was sitting in St. Louis, there was an obligatory hike from their downtown hotel to the St. Louis Zoo, a regimen only broken when Mrs. Woodruff was along with him when he was in attendance upon the court. Then the clerks, some of whom might keep late hours the night before, were relieved to know that they would take the trolley to the zoo. Probably no one remembers Judge Woodruff in a more kindly way than those law clerks. Early in my own judicial career, I was privileged to have one of Judge Woodruff's former clerks as my clerk. This young man recalls the annual party at the Woodrow home, where there was good, if simple, food, some drink, and usually a tree to chop down, or a fence to paint, or some other household chores requiring strong young backs. But there was gaiety and laughter at those parties, as there was in the judge's chambers. He delighted in the storytelling of others, and his hearty laughter was infectious. I was also impressed by the scholarship of Judge Woodruff. He was a voracious reader with a completely Catholic taste in books. I recall finding him one day with Alice in Wonderland on his desk. Now, he could as well drop Shakespearean allusions into the conversation, not for effect, but because they were, like his opinions, fitting and apt, reflecting the classic education in Dresden, Germany, where Louis Brandeis had studied. So Joseph Woodruff was not a common man, but he had the common touch, a characteristic which made him a great jurist and a warm and lovable man and friend. Charles Townsend Copley once wrote, "For the common man, the best memorial is some beneficent thing or function that shall bear his name." Well, today, we are erecting no marble monument to the memory of Judge Woodruff, dedicating no bronze plaque, unveiling no portrait. Instead, we can do something much more meaningful. We can, each of us, resolve to seek to emulate the remarkable life of Judge Woodruff, not alone as members of the bench and bar, for that is likely beyond our ability, but as men and women of integrity, dedication, and compassion. Judge Woodruff has left us a rich and rewarding legacy of service to our fellow man. It will require the best in all of us to be worthy of that heritage. Thank you.
We thank you, Judge Robinson, for those remarks.
Your Honor, I have the honor to present the Honorable Robert Van Pelt, United States Senior District Judge for Nebraska.
May it please the court, on February 10th, 1923, Joseph W. Woodruff entered one of the less important orders of his judicial career, yet important to me in that it admitted me to practice law in the United States District Court for the District of Nebraska. In a month, it'll be 45 years since he left our district court bench. Thus, by lapse of time, I'm one of the few persons who actually practiced law before him as a district judge. In reference to three cases, will tell us some qualities that I want to emphasize. My first case before him was an appeal from an order of the referee in bankruptcy, disallowing the claim of my client against a bankrupt, based upon a promissory note and a chattel mortgage which secured the note. The defense was forgery. The bankruptcy referee so held. I made a statement to the judge substantially, as I've stated thus far to you when he interrupted to ask, "Do you have the note and mortgage, and do you have any exemplars?" I no more than said I had when he said, and I do not know my reply to this question, "Do you know that I'm a handwriting expert?" I handed up the note and the mortgage and the exemplars. He swung around in his chair, examined the instruments intently for a period of time, and then suddenly turned, and without allowing opposing counsel or me to make any further statement, said in substance, "These are genuine, there's no doubt about it. Prepare an order allowing your claim with a lien on the security." Now you'll understand, even at a time like this, that you only tell about the matters that you win. Understand? Shortly thereafter, my senior partner and I were defending a civil case before him. The jury had been impaneled, and counsel for plaintiff had made his opening statement. My partner then stood and made a motion, in those days common in the Nebraska practice. Judge Woodruff had practiced in Nebraska for 20 years before he went on the bench, and then practiced on occasion, in those days used in the federal courts, in which he moved for a directed verdict on the ground that in the opening statement, counsel had failed to state a cause of action. Without allowing any time for a reply by plaintiff's counsel or permitting my partner to continue further, the judge announced the motion will be granted. The jury is instructed to return a verdict for the defendant. The clerk will prepare a form of verdict, and then he pointed to one, the nearest juror, and said, sign this verdict as foreman of the jury. My next story comes from Judge Thomas C. Munger, who always called Judge Woodruff Will. Munger believed in the National Prohibition Act prosecutions. Judge Woodruff did not. Judge Woodruff believed in prosecuting intoxicating liquor violators under the Internal Revenue Act for failure to pay taxes. Judge Munger did not. Judge Woodruff was to hear the case against Queen Louise, reputedly the queen of the Omaha bootleggers and others. It is supposed to last a month. Judge Munger kept telling him that he must keep some notes of the evidence of the trial, a thing that Judge Woodruff seldom did in the trial of a case. The trial, instead of lasting 30 days, lasted 60 days. At the end, the judge threw up his hands, literally, said he knew nothing about the case, he didn't believe the jury would know anything about it, and he was going to direct a verdict of acquittal for the defendants. And he did. My point is, and I think it would be recognized by those of you who knew him best and loved him the most, that he was a very impetuous man. And yet, having personally known all but two of the district judges in Nebraska and having either been on the bench with them or practiced before them, I think it accurate to say that Judge Woodruff was the most human judge the District Court of Nebraska has ever had. It could be said of him, as he said on an occasion such as this, and I quote one sentence from his remarks on a previous occasion, all the treasures of his knowledge that he gathered found lodgment in an humble, kind, good heart. Judge Woodruff was humble. He was kind, he was good, he had a heart. I close by making reference to a book by Bruce Catlin, the Civil War historian, entitled Waiting for the Morning Train. Some of you probably read it. In relating his life from early boyhood, he discusses waiting for the morning limited that took him from the small town of his youth on an unknown road with only one certainty, that if a young man was ever going anywhere, he had to make that trip. In the closing chapter, he discusses old age, saying the chief difference between youth and old age is that youth waits for the morning limited, and age waits for a night train, a train that's never going to come back. He pictures old age at a time when you've seen all the sights, a statement very true, Judge Woodruff. And he says it's a little too dark to see any more if you miss some, and that finally far away, but really not so far, the train can be heard. Catton says the first to hear it is the doctor. And finally, you hear it yourself and go to the platform to get on. There by the steps of the sleeping car is the Pullman conductor. Your name is on his list. He tells you your berth is all ready. And then he adds, as you go down the aisle, and the older ones of you will recall hearing this before, I'll call you in plenty of time in the morning. That morning has come for that humble, kind, good man whose life we honor today. And I'm sure that the first one to greet him on behalf of our court was Judge Munger saying, good morning, Will.
Thank you, Judge Manfell, for those remarks.
Sir, I'd like to present the Honorable Albert G. Schatz, United States District Judge for Nebraska.
Judge Schatz, this memorial ceremony is also for Judge Woodruff's work as a federal district judge and as a circuit judge. And we're most pleased to have the district judges with us in this ceremony. Judge Schatz also was a former law clerk.
Thank you, Judge. Chief Judge Gibson and judges of the circuit court, fellow district judges, members of the bar, gentlemen and ladies, I suppose that outside of his family, there is no one closer to a judge or one who knows him better or what makes him tick than his law clerk. I had the privilege and the pure pleasure of clerking for the judge for 2.5 years. At a time somewhat toward the twilight of his career, my clerkship ending in late 1950. The good Lord creates but a relative few of an unforgettable mold, and fortunately, some of these turn out to be judges. One included in such a mold is the man we remember today. He typifies a quotation from Daniel Webster, who once said, "There is no character on earth more elevated and pure than that of a learned and upright judge. He exerts an influence like the dews of heaven falling without observation." Knowing the judge intimately and working closely with him, I can say to you that Judge Woodruff was a true gentleman of unbelievable humility. In fact, when he hears the tributes paid to him today, I'm sure he will demur and protest that these accolades are undeserved or unwarranted, or at least grossly exaggerated. What a vast treasure chest of teaching he gave us judges, merely from his example and his attitude toward judging. In the best of both worlds, he sat on the trial bench and then on the appellate bench. Unfailingly and absolutely without exception, he was courteous and patient, and always embarked on a conscientious and painstaking search for the truth. His decisions and opinions were rendered promptly, with clarity and as much brevity as permissible under the facts and circumstances. He had really no avocations or hobbies other than his lifelong habit of prodigious walking. His love was the law and the courts. When I came on the bench 5 years ago this month, there was a great political turmoil in our country, as you all remember. And at that time, the judge wrote to me, and among other things, he said, "I know some tough jobs lie ahead. There is a kind of emotional spasm among the people. There is a fear and worry among public servants. Congress and the executive branches are at each other's throats. But the judiciary, as it has always been, goes along calm and dependable." And how he loved the lawyers, and especially on the appellate bench, how he loved the oral arguments. His consideration and kind treatment of the younger and newer lawyers was a trademark with this man, and remains one of his legends, along with his ever-present and extraordinary good sense of humor. Plain common sense was one of his best tools. He allowed that one could probably squeak through a trial without knowing too much about the law, but inevitably would fall down on the job without a good dose of common sense. Through all of this, the judge never lost his compassion and his understanding within the law for the little man, the unimportant man, the unpopular man. When it is all said and done, it would seem that all of these factors comprise the qualities that make a good judge, and they are qualities from which I guess all of us can learn and which we can try to emulate. My good friend, Judge Devitt, Chief Judge of the United States District Court for the District of Minnesota, once wrote, and I close with his quote, which is so appropriate here, "When we go on to the great beyond, or whatever special place might be reserved for judges, we may hope that we will leave behind us a reputation among the members of the bar, that while maybe we weren't the greatest judges in the world, and certainly not the smartest, still we were unfailingly courteous and always patient. That alone should afford us some claim to immortality." Such is Judge Woodruff's claim, and I'm sure that even the good Lord would vote in affirmance. Thank you for allowing me to say these few words about a man whom I love very much.
Thank you, Chief.
Your Honor, I have the pleasure to present the Honorable John T. Grant, presiding judge of the 4th Judicial District of Omaha, Nebraska.
Judge Grant, we're very pleased to have you with us, and I understand you also have been a law clerk to Judge.
Yes, sir, I have been. And may it please the court, I can advise the court in line of succession, I immediately succeeded Judge Schatz. And as Dan Power said, when Duke got work, I got a job as law clerk. I feel greatly privileged to be asked to speak on this occasion as a representative of the many law clerks who were so fortunate as to serve and learn under Judge Woodruff. I know I speak for all of them when I say it's an honor to put on the record some small indication of the tremendous love and respect that all of us had and have for Joseph W. Woodruff. It has been said that no man is a hero to his valet, but I can assure all here that Judge Woodruff was just exactly that, a hero and more to all of his clerks. When one's term of duty as clerk was over, it was only then that one could fully realize that he had been in the company of a remarkable man, a compassionate judge, a wonderful companion, a close friend, a teacher, a philosopher, a person full of warm humor, and all this encompassed in a man without pretense and without false pride. The measure of the man was expressed to everyone in different ways, I'm sure. But in thinking of these remarks, I discovered that the range of Judge Woodruff's interests were summed up for me in 4 books that he gave me over the years. He gave me, first of all, Webster's New Collegiate Dictionary, inscribing on the flyleaf, "On my death, give this book to John Grant." This was in 1951, but I must admit that I changed this testamentary grant into an inter vivos gift, and I've had the dictionary with me since that time. In 1953, he gave me The Symbols of Government by Thurman Arnold, with his inscription, "A Warning Against Subversive Reading." About the same time, he gave me a copy of Taps for Private Tussie by Jesse Stewart, with illustrations by Thomas Benton. This book had been given to Judge Woodruff by the giant of this court, Judge Archibald K. Gardner, who in his letter sending the book made reference to Will Woodruff, the original hillbilly. And lastly, Judge Woodruff gave me and all the other law clerks who attended a glorious party in 1960 on the occasion of the judge's 87th birthday, a copy of 12 Against the Gods, The Story of Adventure by William Bolitho. There is in those books much of the story of his life, a man of words, ideas, ready for adventure, but at the same time a man who had time to just enjoy. He was a young giant throughout his life, no matter what his stature or his age. In summation, let me say that it should be the height of any man's ambition to be able to author, as Judge Woodruff did at age 80, words such as the following from Packinaw versus U.S., 202 Fed Second, 681 at page 684, describing the events leading up to a conviction for rape, a conviction that the judge felt necessary to reverse, much to the chagrin of his dissenting friend John Sanborn. The defendant and the prosecutrix, and I quote now, had spent some hours together on the front seat of the car in talk, listening to the car radio, drinking, and in some non-criminal dallies. In such a man flowed the juices of life. It was the privilege of all of us to have known him and loved him. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge.
I would like to present the Honorable Harry Welch, a past president and distinguished member of the Nebraska State Bar Association.
Well, Chief Judge Gibson, members of the court, family of Judge Woodruff, and friends. It is good for us, his family, friends, and former associates on this court, to come together to do honor to the memory of Judge Joseph W. Woodruff. It is appropriate that we gather here in this courtroom where his whole life was centered. The record of a man's short stay in this life comes down to a few lines, more or less brief, according to his attainments. A few dates in the official records, but a monument in the memory of his friends. The members of the Nebraska State Bar Association, whom I represent at this memorial, join with me in paying tribute to the attainments, the memories, and the accomplishments of a truly great jurist, a truly great man, and a truly great friend. The bench and bar alike share a deep personal loss in the death of our friend Joseph W. Woodruff. The Nebraska State Bar Association is proud to claim Judge Woodruff as one of their own. As has been told, he commenced the practice of law in Nebraska in 1898, 2 years before the Bar Association was formed. The formal Nebraska Bar Association did not come into existence until 1900, and from that time until the time of his death, we had the honor of having him as a member of our association. His membership was the longest in the history of the Bar Association. It is a privilege to be permitted to memorialize the great service rendered to the Bar of the state of Nebraska. Dedication to the cause of justice was paramount in his thinking. His reputation was made as a legal scholar and a judge. His passing has deprived us of one of our great stalwarts, but we must recognize, however, that we were privileged to have him with us for longer than any of our lives. It is for us who remain to take our example from his life and dedication and to rededicate ourselves to serve the principles for which he stood and under which he served so well. Judge Woodruff was a true legal scholar, dedicated to the law in pursuit of excellence. Although unfailingly kind and courteous personally, his convictions and legal opinions were firm, unwavering, and firmly buttressed by both logic and authority. Seldom hesitant in reaching his conclusions, he was nevertheless penetrating and exhaustive in his research. His opinions reflected the quality of his work as well as the quality of his judicial talent. Although reserved in public and invariably reticent, he maintained broad personal contacts and interests. Always well informed, he was delightful, stimulating conversationalist. His humor was broad-ranging and his wit was sharp. He was an outstanding urbane gentleman in the true old-fashioned sense of the term. Judge Woodruff will be sorely missed by all those who knew him. His lasting contribution to the development of the law will continue to live in the record and decisions printed in the books of this court. The State Bar Association of Nebraska wish to pay their respects on this occasion to a great judge, capable, honest, and unassuming, who served well and faithfully for these many years. His friends and associates in the law pay their respect to the quiet, warm, and friendly man who was also a great judge.
Thank you.
Well, John, I would like to present the Honorable David S. Lathrop, the President of the Omaha Bar Association.
Please, the court. Chief Judge Gibson, members of the court, district judges, and friends of Judge Woodruff. On behalf of the Omaha Bar Association, I am pleased to contribute to this occasion. Judge Woodruff spent his active judicial life among us and among the Omaha lawyers. We knew him and we loved him. Nothing delighted our membership more than to have a few remarks from Judge Woodruff at a bar meeting. In later years, it was rare that he could be there, but when he was, and we could get him on his feet, it was a delightful occasion. His remarks were invariably simple, humorous, and encouraging, particularly to the young and struggling lawyers. He loved the law and enjoyed the company of lawyers, constantly reminding them of the delights of their profession. His wit, as we all know, was subtle and kind. It revealed his capacity for self-evaluation and his ability to see himself from a distance on the stage of life. Everyone who got to know Judge Woodruff was better for the experience. And there is a residual heritage from his kindness and wisdom that rubbed off on everyone who was associated with him. Judges, lawyers, and law clerks. And we see his mark to this day on people who have been associated with him. The lawyers of Omaha are grateful for the years that he walked and worked among us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lathrop. At this time, the response of the court to the remarks previously made in this ceremony will be given by Judge Martin D. VanOosterhout, who also, of course, served with Judge Woodruff on his court. Judge VanOosterhout.
Chief Judge Gibson, fellow judges, members of the bar, friends and relatives of Judge Woodruff. I appreciate the honor conferred upon me by designating me to speak for the Court of Appeals on this occasion. The court expresses its appreciation to the committee in charge and to the speakers who have participated in the service honoring the member of our departed brother, Judge Joseph William Woodruff. Will was sometimes addressed as Judge Woodrow, but he did not mind this, he said, because he was appointed district judge by President Woodrow Wilson. The speakers who preceded me have brought out many interesting facts and incidents with respect to Judge Woodruff's long and illustrious career as a distinguished judge and citizen. The court concurs in the tribute paid to our departed brother. As has been pointed out, Judge Woodruff served as an active federal district and circuit judge for 45 years and subsequently continued to serve in the capacity of a senior judge until his death, thus serving as a federal judge for some 61 years. That's including his service as senior judge. As far as I can ascertain, this constitutes a record for length of service and a record that will be difficult to surpass. A few brief remarks on Will's relations with his fellow judges may be in order. Judge Woodruff retired from active service on January 13, 1961, at the age of 88. After taking senior status, Will elected to take a long-deserved rest and not to accept any assignment for judicial duty. Judge Blanthus's letter, which had read, reminded me that he did actually accept an assignment and serve at the dedication of the new courthouse at Omaha in May of 1961. So that terminated his active duties. After that, he did appear with his court on several occasions to participate in the memorial services for departed brothers with whom he had served for many years. None of our present judges had the privilege of sitting with Will on the appeals bench. Many, however, were well acquainted with the judge. Judge Vogel and I were confirmed as judges of the circuit to succeed Judge Riddick and Judge Thomas in August of 1954. Senior Judge Mathis and Mr. Justice Bikeman served with Will for a shorter period. New paragraph. At the time Judge Vogel and I joined the court, it was composed of seven judges. Judges Gardner, Sanford, and Woodruff had served together on the court at that time for over 20 years, and Judges Johnson and Collett had served with Will for a substantial period. While the number of appeals was far less than it is today, the work was as time-consuming as it is at present. The court met four times a year and remained in session long enough to hear all the cases ready for argument. The sessions often ran for two full weeks. All cases were assigned for oral argument, with three cases being set for hearing each day. Each side was allowed 1 hour for argument, which for most cases was an excessive allowance. Many attorneys felt that they were obligated to the court and their clients to use the full allotted time, thereby bringing about a great deal of repetition. Sessions usually ran well into the afternoon. Full-scale opinions were required in all cases. Substantially all of the work was performed by the active judges. Outside judges were rarely called in to assist. The judges all stayed at the Mayfair Hotel, where they were well provided for. This made it easy to find companionship for dinner and visiting after punished for the day. The relations among the judges were excellent. The experienced judges were extremely helpful to any new judges in the post-argument conferences and often made useful suggestions with respect to proposed opinions. There were few dissents, and those filed were courteous and brought about no hard feelings. Rehearings in bank were rarely granted. Judge Woodruff was well informed on the issues and the law. He was courteous and friendly with the members of the bar appearing before the court, and was also courteous and friendly in his relations with his fellow judges. He carried his full share of the work and filed his opinions within a reasonable time. I do not recall his missing any session of court for health reasons. Judge Woodruff took a keen interest in his work and surroundings and appears to obtain the secret of longevity. He would, as some of the previous speakers stated, he would frequently take long walks to distant eating places after the court sessions, and on weekends would frequently take a long walk to the zoo where he enjoyed watching the animals. He had difficulty finding judges to join him on these excursions because it was difficult for the judges to keep up with him. He was often accompanied by his law clerks. I served with Judge Woodruff and Judge Johnson at Omaha on several occasions. Been in Wells' office, there were batch of encyclopedias, the big size volumes there, which I asked him what he used for. He said he used those for an exercise, apparently placing them on the table to put him in the proper position. And that probably was an additional factor which contributed to his longevity in addition to his walking. Judge Woodruff was an able, honest, conscientious, courteous, and hardworking judge. He has outlived his contemporaries, but will be remembered with affection by all who knew him. His many published opinions will constantly remind readers of his valued service to the court. The late John B. Sanborn, whose picture's on the wall to my right in the middle under the clock, who served for many years with Judge Woodruff, in concluding his remarks on behalf of the court at the memorial service for Judge Seth Thomas, said, quote, "It has always seemed to me that the greatest tribute that can be paid to any judge is to have his associates able to say that the court on which he served was a better court because he had been a member. We can honestly pay that tribute to Judge Woodruff."
Thank you, Judge Minister. The court also would like to acknowledge the work and thank Judge Lay as chairman of the court committee for arranging this ceremony today. We do thank Mr. Bruckner, who was chairman of the memorial committee. We thank all the participants in the ceremony, and we thank all of you for attending. The court will now adjourn out of honor and respect to Judge Woodruff. Thank you.